The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Connect with ultra-fast speeds and our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
Hello there and welcome to our weekly podcast. This is a compilation of our best interviews from the last 5 days, all in one place. And so to this week, staff editor of VIP magazine Elle Gordon spoke to me about losing her beloved dad Trevor in April as the whole country was getting to grips with lockdown and processing grief in a socially distant Ireland. In March, Joyce and her fiancé Casey had been due to move back to Ireland from America ahead of their wedding before COVID changed life as we knew it. They told me how, in the end, love conquers all. Caroline Mead talked to me about her amazing dad, Eddie. Having gone through many challenges in life, Eddie often wrote down positive messages to keep himself going. And Caroline told me how she's now passing on these words of wisdom. And I read an email from a listener about the difference the great work being done by St. Vincent de Paul has made to his life after he turned to them for support in his hour of need. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy it. I have a guest I'd like to introduce you to. You would have spoken to me before here on the show, Elle Gordon. Yes. Good morning to you, Elle.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in today. It is that time of the year where everything, I keep saying this, I say it every year, but it's true that the magnifying glass comes on things. Mm. And it magnifies things that makes ugly things very ugly and beautiful things even a bit more beautiful in some ways. Mm. It can work both ways. And you're going to talk to me this morning about your dad, yeah, Trevor, who, strangely, I met once. We'll talk about that in a second. But tell me about him.
Dad was just, he was just the most amazing person. We're from Cavan, so we lived on a farm, and he was just a really talented landscaper. I think he'd love me to say that. He was just everything. He was just hilarious. He was kind. He was just, it's so hard to sum him up because...
But you'd know he was in the room.
He just had this warmth, a presence in a room that when he was there, you could feel him in the room. He just had that ability to make anyone he was talking to feel completely at ease. He would have been a brilliant journalist, actually.
There you
he would
go.
Have been brilliant. Maybe that's where I got it. But
maybe he should have been sitting here for a while.
Maybe he should have been. Yeah. But yeah, he just had a wonderful presence, and it just kind of shone out of him. And he was just an amazing person to have known.
How did he meet your mum?
How did he meet my mum? They met actually in British Bay on the beach.
On the beach,
they
if
did.
You don't mind. Nice. Okay.
They did. And yeah, it was, I think, love at first sight. And they had such a happy marriage, and they were each other's best friend, and like I think I'm very privileged to have grown up with that, just a house so full of love, that they were just best friends.
You have a lot of good things in your life, I can tell.
Yeah.
And when you were growing up, and I'm not talking about being a child, actually, I'm talking about even being a younger woman, when you were going to gigs and stuff like that, was your dad still your first call?
He was. I've actually written pieces about this in the past, but my dad, I have many stories, but there's one memory that always stands out of when I was 17, I insisted on going to Oxygen, insisted. And, I was having a great time, but then one thing led to another. And for whatever reason, I ended up in the hospital tent in Oxygen, as you do. This is back. Now, this is a long time ago but I had to make a call, and it was between my dad and my mum, and I was thinking, who will I call? And, I couldn't call mum, just the thought of calling mum, I couldn't do it. So I rang dad, and I was just like, Dad, and next thing, he arrives down to Oxygen, and he just came into the tent, and I just remember seeing him, and the tears just burst out of me, and he was just so like, what are you doing? What are you doing in bed? And I was like, I had no wellies, I'd lost my wellies, so it just was... Yeah. Sitting there welly-less, and he just was so nice, and didn't give out to me, just brought me home.
He minded you.
He minded me like the big, he was just this big giant protector.
What is it that daughters do to dads that is like a magic spell that casts them? Like the fact that you had to call your dad, not your mother, because you knew that the mother would give you the grief that your father wouldn't give you. What is it you people do to us? And you make a mess of us.
Yeah.
But he was obviously loved you and very much, and you felt that. And what about your siblings? Tell me about that.
Oh yeah, my brother. I have an older brother, and he has his own family. So I have two little nephews now, and then my sister lives in London, and she works as a dietitian. And yeah, he adored both of them just as much. You know, I always talk about my dad, and I talk about my dad a lot on my social media and stuff, and people always say, oh, you're so close. But he was so close with my siblings as well. You know, he just was a family man, you know, and he just was an amazing person.
Am I allowed to ask you how old you are now?
You can.
Go on then.
I'm proud to be, I'm 30.
You're 30, okay. No, yeah. Just put a context on our conversation, because, you know, you're talking like you could be 8.
Oh, right.
And I think that's gorgeous. And I think that when you're 60, you'll be talking about your dad that's the very same way.
Oh, yeah. I always,
you know what
say
I mean?
This.
You want?
If I'm lucky enough to get to 90, I think I'll be talking about my dad and missing my dad and reminiscing. Like,
yes.
He just was an amazing person.
What happened in May 2019? Yeah.
Yeah. So in May 2019, dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And it just came out of nowhere. Like, he was just... You know, up until this point, he'd never so much as had a cold. You know, he was just...
Healthy lifestyle.
Such a healthy man, such a healthy lifestyle. You know, he never drank, he never smoked in his whole life. He was just... So he didn't have maybe the risk factors.
Yes.
I'm not saying that...
No, I know what you mean.
He just didn't have the risk factors that you might associate. And he just was, you know, such an outdoorsy person, like always on the go, you know, like, because he had a haulage business as well as running our farm. So he was just busy, 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 you know, so active.
Loved being busy,
I'd say. Yeah. Oh, loved it.
Yeah, and meeting people and having the crack. Yeah.
Took pride in being so busy. And so this just kind of came out of nowhere. And it is literally, like people say, it's like a bomb going off in your life. It's like an explosion. Because it just, the shock, you know, even now I can remember my sister went to that appointment with dad to get the first kind of, I suppose it was the first kind of inkling that, okay, there's something here. And I do remember that I rang her and she was in tears, and I actually remember that the room kind of swayed. I remember, and I know that happened, because It definitely did. So it was that feeling.
The earth moved, tilted, you know, because you probably knew that you were going to head down this road that you didn't want to go down.
You don't want to go down.
No one wants to be there.
You're still, at that point, I was still so full of hope.
Yeah.
And I think you always should be, you know, no matter what, with anything, you should always hold on to hope.
And with pancreatic cancer, which is obviously nothing, you know, it's rotten and in extreme, but... Given how healthy your dad was, you probably thought, you actually could pull through. You would, you know.
Yeah, and you get like that. You get really like...
Of course you do.
You're like a motivational speaker. You're just like, come on, dad, you can do this. I know you can, you know. And so I just, we were just kind of forging forward and so determined. And come on, like, you know, do the chemo and do the radiation and you got this.
You can do this.
But unfortunately, as the oncologist put it... nothing just went his way, you know. They just treatment wasn't effective, and then in February of this year, you were told. Yeah,
I'm afraid it's not good news.
Yeah. But we didn't know. Like, they don't. Well, I don't know. For our experience, anyway, they didn't necessarily put a timeline on it or anything. They just said, you know, we're that's it with treatment now. There's nothing more we can do.
And that was in February.
That was in February.
And your dad passed away in...
In April, yeah.
It was swift.
Yes.
Can I ask you, Elle, what you do with that time between February and April?
Yeah.
You don't want to be miserable.
Yeah.
You don't want to bring him down.
Yeah.
Because God only knows where he's in his head.
Mm.
Can I ask you how you spent some of that time?
Well, actually, it was a really strange thing, because I've always lived in Dublin. My parents live in... Well, my mum lived... Oh, I don't know how to say it. Anyway.
Do you know what? You're grappling with the language of grief. And it is very hard, because it's a whole new lexicon for you. So you just slip up and slip away, because it's totally natural.
I still feel like he's there. You know,
of
when I'm here,
do.
I feel like he's there. So, so I had... It was a funny time. I was actually home, because I had my hip replaced in February. Mm-hmm. So that was just a few days after we'd been told... this news. Mm-hmm. So then I was actually home while I was recovering for that whole time. So I was home from February until, like, actually I was home for, then it was lockdown, obviously, then everything happened with the pandemic. But yeah, so it was actually a really precious time. Looking back, it was just a really special time. And the fact that Dad got to see that my hip was okay, which was something he worried about so much.
I bet you did, yeah.
He worried about me so much. And so it was like a little moment of joy for us to have that sorted and to have that just resolved in a way. Because then I just felt like Dad, it was just a weight off his shoulders in a way.
Yes.
Although he was dealing with everything that he was dealing with, he was happy about that. And then, so we just spent a lot of time together. As I say, my brother and my sister, like my sister's in London, my brother's in Dublin. So it was just the three of us. And it was a really special time. And we used to just have lunch together every day and stuff. And we kind of laugh about it because it was so unusual for all three of us to be home together. But it was really special.
Yeah.
And, you know, because obviously I was recovering from hip surgery, so there were some times where I'd be too tired or something. You sleep a lot after that surgery. And Dad would say, you're not coming down for lunch, you know, the three of us, I tried to make the effort to always come down and have lunch and just chat.
How were his spirits at that time, those couple of months?
Yeah, he was a very, you know, my dad is such a strong person, a very stoic person. And, He did his best. He really did his best, because I think he just obviously adored my mum so much. And I think his worst fear was that he might be, you know, a burden or anything. And he just couldn't bear, I suppose, the fact that he really had to lean on my mum so much for all the amazing support that she gave him during that time. And he just wanted to be himself. He just wanted to be Mr. Full of Life and, you know, perfect health. And he wasn't. So it is a bit like, I think when the loss of health, it can be like a little bit of a loss of identity as well. That
you become defined.
Was defined by being Mr. On the Go, and suddenly he wasn't. So it was a very difficult time for him, but I think he handled it as best he knew how. And I'm so proud of him, and I just, like, I still can't believe he's not here.
That, and I appreciate your honesty. It's not an easy thing to talk about, especially as how recent the news is when you think about it. Did you say goodbye to him?
It's a funny one. We couldn't really, Dad didn't want to talk about that. He didn't want to talk about the going. So we didn't, you know, as in we were all together and, you know, but yeah, we did, like, we never had a conversation where I said, I don't know how to answer that. It's funny because it's such a blur as well now looking back.
Well, you know something, Elle, you kind of answered it already anyway by saying, those lunches were in some way a long goodbye, you know, without having to say physically the words good and bye.
Yeah.
He knew that you were together. He knew that you loved him. Mm. You knew that you were loved.
Yeah.
I hope that's a farewell in itself.
Oh yeah, there was so much love. Like, you know, even now when I talk about it, this is why I'm kind of doing this today, or, you know, even how I, like, you know, friends will say to me who've lost loved ones, they'll say, you're so open about it. But for me, talking about him is comforting. It keeps him alive. It keeps him in the room. When I was telling somebody that I was doing this and they said, I said, oh, Dad's going to love it. And then I had to be like, no, well, maybe. You know, I hope, I'd like to think that
the wireless could, in the sky.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he could hear it. But yeah, just for me anyway, my grief seems to be that I just want to talk about him and make sure that Trevor Gordon is a name that, you know, keeps, like, in people's minds and in people's conversations. And, you know, I can't wrap my head around the idea that as time goes on, I have less reasons to use the word dad. Like, I can't, I need to.
And I understand that entirely. Can I ask you, you had to have a funeral in the middle of COVID, and we've been hearing about these desperately sparse and kind of sad looking funerals. Yeah. But I don't know if they are sad. Obviously, funerals are sad in what they are, but for the family, is it more intimate and is it more personal, or did you miss the presence, the idea, not that you've had one before, but did you miss the collegiality of it, if you want to call it that, or certainly the comfort rather of others? You did?
Definitely, because with our, you know, at the time, this was April, so the restrictions were even you know, they weren't even what they are now, which I think is 25. Mm-hmm. I think we had 10 people. I wouldn't call it a funeral, I'd call it a burial. You know, I just, the funeral aspect of it to me wasn't there. But my dad's brother-in-law, Robin, came down and he said a few words and, you know, he did a beautiful job. So having him there was really special. And, you know, I think, it's a day that everyone says to you when you lose someone, it's going to be a blur, and you don't really understand that at the time. But now looking back, it definitely is. But I think for me, the starkest thing about it wasn't actually that, because you're kind of in a strange mode. But it's when you come back, when we came home and it was just the four of us, you know, and my mom started making a curry or something. Yeah. And it was like, oh, my gosh, like we didn't have what you kind of have experienced in the past. If you've been at a funeral, is that kind of thing of people just, you know, pushing in the door and the kind of the stories and the chats and everything. We didn't have that. But I will say we did have a really beautiful moment provided by our neighbours, where when we came down our front avenue, we walked down behind the hearse, and our neighbours had lined the road. So as the hearse drove through, they had lined it. And it's funny because I can remember the colours of the clothes as opposed to remembering the faces. So yeah. I couldn't tell you the names of everyone who was there.
That's the blur, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the blur. But I just know that they were there. And I just remember that for my mum, that was just so precious. And it was just such a kind of a lovely tribute to Dad and who he was. And the fact that in the middle of this pandemic, when everyone is so worried and so stressed about their own things, that they took the time to walk out of their houses and walk down the road and do that for us.
How's your mum?
Oh, my mum, she's the most amazing person I know. So she's just doing her best. You know, she's missing her best friend, I think, is the only, he was her best friend. He was her favourite person. So that's really difficult. I do think losing a parent is so difficult. But I think losing a spouse, you know, they're the person that you do everything with. And, you know, I think for mum, it's kind of, this is the longest she's ever not spoken to Dad. Yeah. You know, they would have been on the phone when he was out, whatever. He would ring her 3 to 4 times a day. Like, they were always chatting. And I think that's the most,
the empty chair, I think, is a problem for people, because
there
should always be the presence of that person, whether it's Christmas Day or whether it's every day.
Yeah, that's the thing. People, I think that's a really good point, because I think people, you know, would say to me, I definitely would get, you know, a lot of messages around birthdays and, you know, now we're coming up to Christmas of just, you know, this will be hard. I hope you're doing okay. But I kind of think with grief, like, it's hard on a random Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't need.
It doesn't need a specific day.
Yes, yeah.
It's just waking up and realising that you're in the world and Dad's not. Or like, you know, for anyone who's listening, they're in the world and their loved one isn't. It's that feeling of, and you're kind of looking around trying to.
Exactly. But that's like Christmas. Even the message of Christmas is kindness.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need one day for that. Yeah. That should be all year.
Well, I have felt, and my family have definitely felt, the kindness all year.
I'm delighted to hear that.
I just think people are amazing. And I've had so many, because I have spoken about it a bit on my own social media, and the kindness of people is extraordinary. Like, I know we hear a lot about the sad side of social media and the cruel side of social media. But for me, the kindness of complete strangers reaching out to me saying, you know, if you'd like to talk about your dad, or if there's anything I can do, or
there's goodness out there, Elle.
Yeah.
I can totally relate to Elle's story, says the text. My dad, Brendan, passed away from pancreatic cancer 16 years ago. And like Elle, we got to bring him home at some special time before he passed away on December 29th, 2004. And Moira says, my dad died suddenly 2 weeks before Christmas when I was a child. I miss him to this day, 40 years on. Lovely listening to Elle, though, talking about her dad. Elle's father, says another, would be so proud of her. He sounds like the perfect dad. My perfect mum passed away too from cancer age 64. And like Elle's dad, she never smoked or drank and was very healthy pre-diagnosis. She kept her terminal diagnosis from us to protect us all, even my dad, and we still miss her. And one more says, listening to Elle, and it's like listening to my daughters talking about their wonderful dad who sadly passed away from pancreatic cancer 11 years ago. Like Elle, my children had and still live in the joy of the wonderful gift her dad gave her. So you're making people think about their own stories this morning and where they're at in the world. I want to wish you a happy Christmas. And to your family.
Thank you.
Especially your mum.
Yeah.
I met your dad very briefly in the green room on the Late Late Show.
Yes.
One night. I think we got our picture taken that night.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was all the things you've said. Even in that brief encounter.
Yeah.
He seemed to be somebody who was enjoying himself.
Oh, he was thrilled that night. He loved it. Well, the free sandwiches in the green room.
Imagine. And some crisps. It's the simple things, as you know.
Simple things.
But
he
was very proud of you, and rightly so. So look, you've got a road to travel now, you know that, but you seem to be so on top of things as much as you can be. But I think your honesty and your ability to keep talking about it is going to help you through.
Yeah, and I just think it's really important to talk about grief. And I think it's a really difficult subject, but I think that the only way that I can see of moving through it is kind of moving with it and talking about it. And I just know from talking to loads of my friends who have lost, like a lot of my friends have actually lost their dads too, and we all find such comfort in talking to each other, whereas before, when I feel like I didn't really know the level of grief before, I think I would have, maybe I could have bumped into someone and I might have known, oh, they've lost this person, and I would have thought, oh well, I don't want to, maybe I'm going to say the wrong thing. And actually now I've realized, I don't think you can, there's nothing wrong you can say. You can just say, I'm here if you need me. I'm here if you want to talk about this person, or if you don't.
Yeah, that's it. You've nailed it. That's exactly the way to be.
Yeah.
And it took that awful story for you to see that. But now you know, and you'll be a source of comfort for others along the road.
Yeah, well, a real source of comfort for me with this is to think that people might be talking about Dad today.
Well, they sure will. They sure will. So. And you and your family. Elle Gordon, thank you for being here with us today. And mind yourself. Let me say good morning to Joyce O'Leary. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you doing?
How's your world?
My world is good.
Good.
Fantastic.
Where are you from?
I'm from Carrickmacross, County Monaghan.
Excellent.
And based in Abbey Field.
Well, do me a favour, if you wouldn't mind, Joyce. Will you bring us back to New York City? And give me an idea of how you met Casey.
Okay, it was the summer of 2016.
Yeah.
And we met at a bar around the corner from where I used to live in Astoria, Queens. And the bar was called The Strand. I just saw this guy in the bar and we just hit it off. He had an amazing sense of humor, kind eyes. We just hit it off, like, from the get-go. And, 4 years later.
On you go.
Yeah.
And before we get to the main crux of our story this morning, Joyce, just give us a sense of what you were doing in New York for a living and for life.
Yeah. So myself and my sister moved to New York in 2010. We are a music act called Sephira, the Irish rock violinist.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So we do a lot of corporate events and theatre performances. So we were mainly in the United States doing that. And it was just literally 5 days before we were moving back to Ireland. We sold all our furniture from our apartment. And, of course, 5 days before I left New York, I bumped into Casey.
Ah, okay. Now, and you, Sophia, obviously, you're brilliant. I've seen you guys, you're really good. I've seen you on Instagram, actually. You're excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well. And no, you bring it this kind of like this great energy to what you do. I'm sure that's why you're employed, because you seem to love what you do.
Yes, we absolutely love working together.
Which is great. Now, let's take us back then to the idea of marriage. You were due to get married when?
August 3rd, the bank holiday this year. And back in May... So maybe I should bring you back to March.
Bring us back to March, that famous, infamous month of this year.
Yeah. So a performance in New York. And I had to say goodbye to Casey after that because we heard that the travel ban was coming in over in the US, and then Ireland was going into lockdown. So I flew back on March 12th, said goodbye to Casey at the airport in JFK, not knowing when we'd see each other again. And
you came back to Ireland?
I came back to Ireland.
Casey stayed in New York City?
Exactly.
And he was due to follow out 2 weeks later, is that right?
We actually didn't know when we were going to see each other next.
Ah, okay. But the wedding was in August, you booked for August.
Exactly,
In Ireland.
Yes, exactly. Because most of our relationship, like, we have been able to spend time together. We made sure of that, like, whether it was him coming to Ireland or me going to the US. But we were hoping in August, like, that the distance would definitely just end. But it just became more and more 9 months later. He arrived in Ireland November 30th.
So the wedding was clearly cancelled in August.
Yes.
And
you
had to wait until, what, 2 weeks ago before you last saw him?
Yes.
Okay.
Very patiently.
I was going to say, let me ask you a couple. There's loads of things in this. First of all, what's it like to cancel a wedding?
It was actually, I'm sure for many couples out there, it was really stressful, but Our vendors were absolutely amazing.
Okay, good.
We knew it was going to happen at some stage. And we kind of were very operational about it. So long as our families were safe and sound, that's all really that mattered. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, okay. So the pandemic trumped any concerns about a day out.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Absolutely.
That makes huge sense.
We just knew it was going to happen at some stage, yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, Casey gets on board the plane and comes over the Atlantic.
Yep, absolutely.
What was that like?
Well, he sent me a selfie from the plane. He had plenty of space between each passenger.
I bet.
I'll let him explain his journey from the airport to Abbey Fields. His first time driving on the left-hand side of the road. That was
an adventure.
Story in itself. Yes. But he arrived at my apartment in Abbey Field and I moved out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I said hi from a distance. We didn't even get to hug. So he went into the apartment and then I moved into my sister's house.
For 2 week quarantine.
Well done.
So 2 weeks quarantine. Isn't that amazing I just feel it still feels like science fiction. He crosses the Atlantic to be with his future wife and he can't even hold her.
Yeah.
That is the
It was very,
thing.
Very strange. Very strange. But we held out for 2 weeks and then on December 14th, we gave each other the biggest hug ever. Yes. Yeah.
And so you're back in the game.
We are back in the game and we're due to get married this Saturday.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So where are you getting married?
We're getting married in Cabra Castle.
Yeah.
In County Cavan. It's actually just the next town over from Carrickmacross. And honestly, everybody at Cabra Castle have been so amazing. I cannot speak highly enough about them. They're fantastic.
And how many will be at the wedding?
Seven people.
Seven?
Yeah.
What's the limit?
My mom, it's actually 25 at the moment, but we planned it when level 5 was in. We didn't know if, you know, it was going to stay at level 5, if you know what I mean. So we just kept it really small. And because Casey's family can't be there at all, we're going to have it via Zoom. So his mom can do a reading. His sister can do prayers of the faithful. We just want that interaction.
So it's like the Late Late Show. You have some of it will be on Zoom, some of it in real life, and there'll be a bit of music.
Exactly.
That sounds like a great the Late Late Wedding. You got there eventually, but it's great.
Yeah.
It's a great result. So you will have no live music. Would that be right?
Well, my sister is going to be bridesmaid, and because she's super talented, she's going to whip out the violin.
Which would make perfect sense, of course.
Absolutely.
And is Casey there with you?
He is. He's right beside me.
Well, let me say hello to him, for goodness sake.
Of course.
Oh, the proud groom, we should say.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, sure. Let me chill down.
Hi.
Hi, Casey.
How's it going, Ryan?
Welcome to Ireland.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you now, as you're as good as an Irish, honorary Irish citizen now. So congratulations to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully one day.
What part of the world are you from?
I'm from New York.
Great.
So grew up outside of New York City in a city called Yonkers.
Oh, yeah, sure. We know it well from, if nothing else, from the song by from Ella Fitzgerald. It was great.
And That's right.
Have you been to Ireland before?
Yeah, I'd say this is my 14th time here, I think.
Whoa, okay, you're committed. What is Ireland like for Casey when you come from Yonkers to Ireland? Is it bonkers?
No, it's great. Feels like it's in many ways better than home. So the people are always nice. And actually, before I even met Joyce, I'd been to Ireland once.
Great.
It was, did the whole tourist thing, went to Temple Bar. I stayed in alongside the River Liffey.
Great.
I came here for the Croke Park Classic because the university I went to, they had a football game in Croke Park. And it was just a great experience.
You got stuck in, did you, Casey? You saw the sights and had the fun.
I did. So I was here for about 4 days, and then I made it a point that I wanted to come back because it's really not a long flight.
No, it's not. It's fine, all things considered. And tell me, how did you cope with all this COVID coming and going, or not coming, or not going?
At first there was no end in sight. Just played it by ear. There was no other way to, because no one knew what's going on. No one knows. No one can tell you the best way to go about things.
Sure.
The government guidance just kept changing. So we, we're just FaceTiming. Once Joyce left in March, we were FaceTiming, as we always do every day, just trying to figure out how to plan according to what we're seeing on the news.
Yeah, of course. And, watching, remember in the dark days, Casey, watching Governor Cuomo every day coming out, and it was dark, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In New York.
Definitely was. And, people were just saying, go outside and wear a mask.
Mm.
Even if I'm not walking by near anyone, I have a friend who's a doctor saying, just wear your mask, Casey. And it just sounded insane. It sounds so commonplace now to wear a mask, but put yourself, back 10 months ago, the idea of wearing a mask was so foreign.
Yeah, so foreign, exactly. Now, where's your dad from, Casey?
My dad he's been in the U.S. since 1960.
Oh, yeah,
but
okay.
But he's originally from Hong Kong. He's a World War II baby. He grew up in the, mainland China. Got, that was getting bombed out, and so he had to go to Hong Kong and then eventually made his way to New York.
And your mom?
My mom is from the Philippines.
Brilliant.
She came here. Yep. And they met in the 60s, and they actually got married on the same day the U.S. landed on the moon. So that was July 20th, 1969.
Amazing.
So,
great history. And a great story of the American dream, Hong Kong, Philippines, and now you in Ireland. That's what it's all about.
It is. And I'm excited to be be moving here because I've seen enough of it to know that it's a great place. And I totally want to know what it's like to not just be here for, a clip of days at a time or a week or so, to actually, just adopt the Irish way of life.
Well, you've auditioned the country 14 times, so at least it got the job in the end, which is good news. And you'll have family beaming in from around the world on Zoom.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only way they can attend.
Sure.
So, you have to just deal with the circumstances.
You sure do. Well, look, put me back on to Joyce, Casey. Congratulations. Happy Christmas and happy rest of your life.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
You're most welcome. Nice talking to you. See you soon. Okay, and Joyce, before we say goodbye.
Yes?
There's loads of nice, lovely messages coming in to you both. And Lauren and Siobhan were on to say that Joyce is my daughter's piano teacher and she loves the lessons with Joyce. A great teacher. Works with the child's talents to help them progress. Best wishes for the weekend, of course. And meanwhile, then, of course, Arnis got on to say, come on. Sort these people out. Jando large framed picture to capture a gorgeous moment from this Saturday. The head plan, which is 3 head plan journals to help you plan ahead for your big day next year. Holderite, which is a yoga mat and sweatshirt. You'll need that obviously for downtime after all the wedding planning. And Atelier Cologne, which are something for Casey to wear on the big day. A big bottle to keep you going until the summer wedding maybe, and a small bottle to take you through this Saturday. So lovely gifts from our friends.
So
at
kind. So
no, not at all. Delighted about that. And I'm going to go out on a little clip of you singing. This is you singing Walking the Air, is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Walking on the air this weekend, obviously. Oh. But Joyce, happy Christmas and congratulations to you and Casey. Thanks for saying hello this morning.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Good luck
Great
with everything.
To you.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks
Bye.
A lot. Bye-bye. There she goes. That's Why am I fading myself out? It's her going. I'm here. This is a little clip of what she does. She's with her sister in the band Zafira.
I'm holding very tight. I'm riding in the midnight blue. I'm finding I can fly so high above with you.
Lovely. What a great piece of music and beautifully portrayed there and performed. Gorgeous. Nice story. And, you know, speaking about COVID, you hear about sad stories about the COVID funeral, but it is nice to hear about a COVID wedding and love breaking on through to the other side. Back in a second. Caroline Mead, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for having for being with us, I should say. And, you know, we spoke to Elle yesterday about her dad, and it is the season that we remember people that we love so much. And your dad was another big figure in your world. Will you tell me about him? Tell me about Eddie.
Yeah, so my dad was a character full of life and would have been the life and soul of the party. Great fun, and really just enjoyed putting his best foot forward and making the most of life as he could.
And what was his job, or what did he get up to for a living?
Well, he was a carpenter by trade, yeah. And trained when he was younger and went on then to work for himself over the years and did lots of different other things. Was very creative as well.
Was he somebody who dressed well?
Yes, he dressed very well. He loved his clothes. He loved his fashion. He loved how he looked. He was just great. Yeah.
He couldn't pass a mirror without stopping. Would that be fair to say?
No, very true. Looking at himself, yeah.
Right, or even a good window with a half-decent reflection would do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
oh my God.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't recognise any of these traits in myself, you know. I'm just curious as to what exactly we're dealing with here. He had a tough year in 1994, though.
Yeah, so in 1994, he started having epileptic seizures, right. And they found out that he had extra blood vessels in his brain that they needed to remove. So he went to have surgery to remove them. But unfortunately, the surgery went wrong a little bit where an infection got into the brain and he ended up having to have two more surgeries within a few weeks and have the left piece of his skull removed because of the infection, and they couldn't stop the bleeding. So they needed to remove that piece of his brain at that time.
And was there any long-term implications for something like that?
Yeah, so he was left with a brain injury, so that caused cognitive impairment, and also he had dysphasia, so it was the inability to remember or verbalise certain words. Okay. So if he wanted to say something, he might struggle with what he wanted to say. Even though over years we got to, I suppose, understand that and nearly finish the sentences for him, you know.
Yes, yeah, you just learned how to roll with it.
Absolutely, yes.
And positive messages. I mean, if ever there was a year that we required such a thing, it's this year. And I spent, in fact, we all took a number of cards of positive messages this morning on the desk to read that were all written by your dad.
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
So after his surgery, he obviously, his life completely changed and he lost a lot of his confidence and became quite lonely. I suppose you'd lose people around you, but you also, when you go through something like that, it can be quite isolating just in terms of how you're feeling. And for him, with a brain injury, it's quite an invisible illness because you look fine, but you're not.
Mm.
And he used to start to write lovely little positive messages to himself. His first one was called Each Day, and that was to really just motivate him to keep going and to rebuild his life and to get back on his feet and get back to where he was. And he did this over the last 25 or 26 years. He loved little quote books and different things like that. And last year, unfortunately, he started developing very progressive vascular dementia. And he'd always talked about putting his little quotes into a book form. But a friend of mine suggested that maybe he'd make a deck of cards that he could put all of his cards together in a colourful way. Mm. So myself and my husband designed the cards and got them printed up. And they're in a little box and look like a deck of cards, really. So the idea is that people could lay them out in front of them and pick a little message for themselves. And the cards are small enough to put in your wallet or carry with you throughout the day.
Yeah, to kind of encourage you to face the day with optimism and a sunny disposition, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Who's Cedric?
Cedric is all of our initials. So it's the name that he used when he wrote things. He always just put Cedric at the end of it. So it's the initial of myself and my three brothers and our family name and my dad's.
So you all got a look in there, obviously.
We did, absolutely.
You mentioned your dad got quite unwell then in January.
Yeah.
And then, of course, along comes COVID, and he would have been... was he hospitalised at that point, or...?
He was hospitalised over the summer with very bad hallucinations and delirium.
Okay.
And he was starting to get a little bit aggressive, unfortunately, with the illness. But it was very, very progressive. I mean, back in March, he was still driving, doing his own washing, cooking, cleaning.
God, it's quick, yeah.
And it was very quick. And then what happened was we were told then by the hospital that myself and my brother, he lived with my brother, was we weren't going to be able to care for him by ourselves anymore. And we had the difficult decision then of having to place him in nursing home care.
How old was he?
He was 69 when he went in, and he turned 70 when he was there.
He's terribly young.
Very, very
young. In the modern age, for sure.
Yeah, very young.
And difficult for you all.
Yeah, it was extremely difficult over the last 2 years were very difficult, but this year was quite difficult, like so many other people as well.
And October?
So he, unfortunately then, he wasn't long in the nursing home, only a few months. He contracted COVID and he passed away a couple of days after it on the 8th of October.
I'm sorry about that.
And I suppose at that time at the funeral, and like the lady who sent the text in about her mother being buried on Monday, we actually found it a very healing experience. It was hard not to have my two brothers are abroad and couldn't get back for the funeral, and that was very difficult, but it was very intimate and we created a lovely energy.
This is so reassuring. The small weddings, the small funerals, this is a real positive outcome of this, in the sense that some people don't need or want or require the circus. Some people, and I'm circus is probably pejorative, but some people don't need the big numbers, and you seem to be not that you'd be happy, but positive about it.
Well, I got a lot of peace, and I know there's so many families out there who've been affected by COVID where it isn't a peaceful thing. But for us, it actually gave my dad the release that he needed, you know, because I would have not liked to have watched what would have happened considering how quick he had deteriorated. And I felt a release for him. Sadness for us,
of course.
And you want to keep somebody for yourself selfishly. But for him, he would not have wanted the way that things had happened. And at the funeral, we brought one of his packs of cards up as a symbol. And afterwards, someone, as part of organising the funeral, approached me to say that his own dad had dementia and that he just loved the thought of the cards that he was, and wanted to get a pack to read with his dad every day to bring a positive message to his dad. And that just made me feel it was time to do something with the cards. So I also wanted to give back as well and help other people in my dad's position that, you know, need support and might know that they're there. So I'm giving 30% of the profits to Headway Ireland, who are an absolutely wonderful charity at helping support and rehabilitate people with brain injuries and support their families.
That's a great thing to do. You know, did your dad ask you to send me a pack last December?
He did. He asked me last...
Where the hell were they?
Sorry, he asked me last December.
I was sitting there going, where are the cards? Where's Eddie's cards, lads? What happened?
I suppose, like, I...
Come on.
I was caring for my dad during the day.
Yeah, what else excuse have you got? Come on, that's not good enough. You didn't get around to it. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's it.
Yeah, it took you a year.
It took me a year, and he would be thrilled to know that, you know, that you've got them now.
Do you know what? In seriousness, they are beautiful, they are thoughtful, they're meaningful, and they are a legacy to who your father was.
Thank you.
And I want to wish you and your family a happy Christmas.
You too. Have a lovely Christmas. And thanks so much again.
And raise a glass to that great man, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
And we'll see you soon.
Great.
Thanks, Caroline Mead.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye.
You're brilliant. Thank you. The cards are gorgeous. And the Believe in Yourself cards, you can get them on itstimeforme.ie. You know, every year we talk about the Vincent de Paul, svp.ie, for those of you who are in a position to do something nice for them by way of donation. You know, if you donate, it goes locally, and it could be, as I keep saying, briquettes in the fireplace or a tin of biscuits in the press. And the people who, the Vincent de Paul, part of the reason I love this charity so much, I admire what they do, and all the chapters around the country and all the volunteers and who work in the shops and call to the door. It's discreet. It's really discreet and it's dignified. That's what I love about this charity. And, you know, some people get to the end of their tether emotionally and financially. And there are so many different services, whether it's Samaritans, whether it's Aware, whether it's a loan, whether it's Peter House, whether it's Alice Leahy, whether it's Peter McVerry, whether it's we could go on. Just so many people doing so many good things around the country for people in trouble. But who are the people in trouble? And when do they find themselves like George Bailey at the bar, muttering into their fist, tears in their eyes, and just saying, I'm not a praying man, but if you can get me out of this corner, I would really appreciate it. Just help. And who do you ask when you want to be that person who is the leader of a family, the father figure, the mother figure, the person who has to keep it all together? Where do you go when you're the one that everyone goes to? Eventually, there comes a time where you actually have to turn and look left or right and say, help. Here's an email that sums this up. It came into us in November, and I didn't read it out to you because the man who wrote to us said afterwards, you know what, don't read it out, leave it. But I'm reading it today because, well, let me read it and all will become apparent. It says, good morning, Ryan. I'm writing this email to you to try and explain what this COVID has done to me and my little family. And let me start by telling you about myself. I'm a separated father of two young girls and I work in the hospitality industry. At least I was. I was always comfortable financially. And my idea of being comfortable was food on the table, all the bills paid, a little break every summer, nice presents at Christmas, and a few quid to buy a new jacket or new runners for my girls when they needed them. And to having to afford these few things meant I was comfortable and, more importantly, that I was happy. And this morning, I kissed my two daughters goodbye as they went off to school, oblivious to any worries or anxieties that their father has. I'm putting on a brave face and I don't want them worried. I came into the kitchen after they left and I cried uncontrollably. And Ryan, can you please tell me, how am I supposed to go and keep going and survive on €300 a week? I don't have a plan B this time. I look in my fridge and I know that I only just have enough food to do us until Tuesday, when the next COVID payday comes. I'm actually frightened. I fear that I actually will not have the money for basic necessities. I fear that I'm going to fall behind on my bills. I fear I won't be able to buy new clothes for my two girls. Fear like this is something I've never experienced before in my life. Christmas is just around the corner and the thought of it is making me physically and mentally sick. I'm sorry for this depressing email and I've no doubt that I'm just like many other parents in this country this morning. I hope someone hears this story of a day in my life. I needed the vent. And again, I apologise. But thank you for listening and I appreciate it if I could stay anonymous, please, as this is so embarrassing for me. And obviously we have the gentleman's name and we made contact with him and asked him how he was doing. And he kind of explained to us that he wrote it at the end of his tether. He just had to do something, had to write to someone to say something, to get it off his chest. When you're sitting in the kitchen with tears streaming down your face, wondering, what can I do for these two girls? That's desperate. And it's fear. And it's horrible. And you're wondering, looking at the fridge and you're looking at the order and you're looking at the bills and you're looking at the ads and you're looking at the movies and you're looking at the expectations and everyone telling you it has to be like this and has to look like this and has to feel like this. And you're going, I don't have this. I can't afford this. Where do you go? He wrote that in November. And then this week, he wrote a follow-up email. I'm going to read to you now. Same man, different day, different month, different vibe. And it says, Dear Ryan, just an update on how I'm doing at the moment. For a while, I was just about coping. But since I was last in touch, I contacted SVP. And they gave me some shopping vouchers. That was unbelievable. I was embarrassed, but I was happy to receive them. I'm adjusting to this strange life we're all living at the moment. I really know there's not much point getting myself into the depressed state of mind I got myself into recently. Realistically, my problems are actually tiny compared to other families. I mean, my children's health is perfect. We still have a roof over our heads and we don't have to wake up in a hotel bedroom like other families. We still have food on the table and SVP were a help to me. My kids are great. They don't want much. I will still make it a very special time for them to be to the best of my ability. My own head is in a better place now, which the kids have picked up on. And our home is a happier place. I will get there this Christmas. If you believe, you will receive. So apologies for some of the depressing words before. That was my rock bottom. I want to wish you and yours a very happy Christmas. God bless and kind regards, our anonymous dad. And there's something very George Bailey about this man's life in the last month. And now he sees a bit of the light, got a bit of help. It's called Mehel. It's called community. It's called kindness. And Vincent de Paul, I think the Late Late Show pulled in about €1 million from you. And you know what? Every penny of that is going to be spent on people like this. Shopping vouchers. Imagine the simplicity and yet the profound enormity of it for somebody who just hasn't got the wherewithal at that time. And I know this guy will. I really believe it, because we've talked about Vincent de Paul for 20 years on this programme. It started off in school putting boxes together when I was a kid. It's something I really believe in. And part of it is that this guy will be back up on his feet when the pandemic goes away. This guy's obviously a really good person. He'll be in a job. If I knew who he was, he'd be, you know, and I was his boss, I'd be promoting him, because he's obviously such a good person and a good dad and a good man, and a good soul. And he will donate back to the Vincent de Paul when he's back on his feet. And they keep telling you in the Vincent de Paul, and they're right, don't be too proud to ask. Do not be embarrassed. It's normal to feel that. It's perfectly normal. But try not to. And do, sometimes we all need, emotionally, sometimes financially, a hand up and not a hand out. Big difference. And it'll get you over the line. And if you're in a position to help Vincent de Paul at this point, svp.ie would be a very, very nice way to go. But to that man and his beautiful girls, and I know that he has a good relationship with his ex, and I know that they're going to spend Christmas together. This isn't the saddest story of all time, which is good news. They're smart people, good people. I want to wish you a very, very happy Christmas, and thank you for your time this morning.